Good evening, Rabotai. As tonight is the third night of Hanukkah, I would like to share with you a most interesting observation which Rabbi Soloveitchik developed concerning the origin of the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah and some of the halakhic consequences as a result of his theory concerning the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah. The only Tanaitic text that provides halachic background for the Yom Tov of Chanukah is a braita in Megillat Ta'anit, cited in Masechet Brachot on Daf Chof Aleph Amud Bet. It is a well-known braita. I'll read the critical elements of the braita for you. My Chanukah, what exactly are the which miracle was responsible for the establishment of the Yom Tov of Chanukah as a Yom Tov to be observed every single generation? So the Braita says, "B'tanu Rabbanan, b'chafhei b'kislev yomei d'chanukah, 25th day of the month of Kislev, these are the days of Chanukah. T'manyun inun d'lo l'mispad b'hon u'd'lo l'hitanot b'hon. These 8 days, one is not permitted to offer eulogies, nor is one permitted to fast." And then the Braita gives the famous story. Shekishenichnesu Yevanim laheichal, timu kol hashmanim. When the Yevanim entered the Beit HaMikdash, they defiled all of the oil, and they only discovered one cruse of oil that had the seal of the Kohen Gadol, and there was sufficient oil to last only one night. HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed a miracle. The cruse of oil lasted 8 days. And here comes the critical line. L'shana acheret, next year, kav'um ve'as'um yomim tovim v'halel v'hoda'ah. Next year, the Bet Din of the Hashmonaim decided to establish this as a Yom Tov for future generations, v'halel v'hoda'ah. Says Rashi, what exactly does Halel and Hoda'ah mean? Says Rashi, Lo she'asurim b'melacha. This particular Yom Tov does not follow the pattern of biblical Yomim Tovim, and that you are allowed to do melacha on Chanukah. No restrictions against melacha. So what are you obligated to do? Ela likrot Halel v'lomar al hanisim b'hoda'ah. The only two things that you have to do is to recite the Hallel daily during Shacharit and recite Al HaNisim in the Bracha of Hoda'ah. That's the Bracha of Modim in Shmone Esrei and the Bracha of Nodelecha in Birchat HaMazon. What is conspicuously absent from the original Takana of the Yom Tov of Chanukah? What is there no reference to in terms of our observance of the Yom Tov of Chanukah? Again, Rashi says that we're obligated to read the Hallel and to recite Al HaNisim. Obviously, there is something missing, and that obviously is there is no indication that there is a mitzvah to be Madlik Neirot. None whatsoever. And the question which the Rav posed was, why is it that in the only Tanaitic source which provides the halachic background for the Yom Tov of Chanukah, is there no reference to our practice of kindling the menorah 8 days of Chanukah? And Rabbi Soloveitchik suggested the following theory. But of course, a theory is only a theory, unless you can have some type of halachic support to document your theory. Suggested the Rav that the events of Chanukah took place historically in 165 BCE, approximately 235 years before the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, which took place in 70 of the Common Era. Therefore, the Rav proposed the following suggestion, that as the Beit HaMikdash was restored and the Avodah service in the Beit HaMikdash resumed, there was no mitzvah of hadlakat neirot whatsoever. For after all, the menorah was burning brightly every single evening in the Beit HaMikdash. However, after the Churban HaMikdash, that's when Chazal instituted the mitzvah of hadlakat neirot, not necessarily originally to perpetuate and to commemorate the miracle of the cruise of oil, but rather to serve as a zecher l'neirot shebemikdash, for us to commemorate the practice that existed in the Beit HaMikdash of the lighting of a menorah. And for this reason, the only two features of the Yom Tov of Chanukah, which Rashi identifies, is the mitzvah of reading the Hallel and reciting Al HaNisim. For after all, the episode or the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah did not necessarily exist at the time that the Yom Tov of Chanukah was proposed and formulated as a mitzvah l'dorot. In order to document and to somehow support this theory, the Rav made the following references. There is a Gemara in Masechet Shabbat. There are only three datim in all of the Talmud that discuss anything about Chanukah. It's three dapim in Masechet Shabbat in the middle of the second parak, Bameh Madlikin or Bameh Ein Madlikin, which we typically recite in Ashkenaz shuls every Friday night. So there the Gemara poses a most unusual question. The Ibrayelahu, Hadlaka Osem Mitzvah O Hanacha Osem Mitzvah? What exactly is the defining character of the mitzvah of Hadlakat Neirot of Chanukah? Is it A, Hadlaka, the act of kindling, or B, is it Hanacha, to place the menorah in its proper location? So the Gemara, it's a very unusual question, and the Gemara gives a couple of illustrations to highlight the difference. We know that we are told that we are to light the menorah at our doorway opposite the mezuzah, or at least at a window facing the public domain, the Rishut HaRabim, the street. If you believe that hadlaka oseh mitzvah, that the mitzvah is to be defined as an act of kindling, then the act of kindling must take place at the doorway or at the window. But if you believe that hanacha oseh mitzvah, that the definition of the mitzvah is to place the menorah in its appropriate location, you could actually light the menorah in a closet and carry the already lit menorah to its proper location and set the already lit menorah down. That's the question that the Talmud raises. Is it A, hadlaka, kindling, B, hanacha? Why would the Gemara entertain the possibility that hanacha oseh mitzvah, that the definition of the mitzvah is to place the already lit menorah down in its proper location? Most people, if I were to take survey says, would undoubtedly vote for option A, that the definition of the mitzvah is lehadlik, hadlaka oseh mitzvah. The essence of the menorah is to kindle the menorah, and not necessarily to place it in its appropriate location. So why suddenly should the Gemara entertain this possibility? For example, when we discuss Ner Shabbat, there is no such a question raised. Obviously, the mitzvah of lighting candles every Friday night, the definition, the essence of the mitzvah, is to light. Hadlaka oseh mitzvah. Why is it that by Ner Chanukah, the Gemara entertains this possibility? So the Rav pointed us to our interesting Rambam in Hilchot Biat Mikdash, Perek Tet Halacha Zayin. We read in Sefer Bamidbar, chapter 8, that the mitzvah of kindling the menorah was given to the Kohanim. Daber el Aharon v'amarta elav v'ha'alotcha et ha'neirot. You, Aharon, are to kindle the menorah. So Rambam creates this most unusual scene. What happens, says the Rambam, if the Kohen took the menorah, carried it outside of the Beit HaMikdash, and an ordinary Jew, who the Rambam defines as a Zar, a stranger, anybody who is not a Kohen, but a Levi or Yisrael, for Mikdash purposes, is defined as a Zar. So if a stranger, a Yisrael or a Levi, lit the menorah outside of the Mikdash, and the Kohen carries the already lit menorah and places it in an appropriate location in the Beit HaMikdash, opposite the Shulchan, the Kohen is discharged his responsibility. I don't know where the Rambam gets this from, but apparently the Rambam's opinion was that at least in the Beit HaMikdash, the definition of the mitzvah of lighting the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash is hanacha oser mitzvah. Because if hadlaka oser mitzvah, if the act of kindling were central and germane to the fulfillment of the mitzvah, obviously a non-Kohen could not perform this task. A Kohen himself would have to be the one who actually lights the menorah. The fact that the Rambam allows a Zar, a non-Kohen, to actually participate in the actual lighting, and to have the Kohen place the already lit menorah in its proper location, seems proof positive that at least in the Mikdash, hanacha oser mitzvah. Therefore, as we suggest, since the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is designed to serve as a memorial, a zecher, l'neirot shebemikdash, for this reason, the Torah, or the Gemara rather, entertains the possibility that by Ner Chanukah, we should also say, hanacha oser mitzvah, that the placing down of the already lit menorah might be the essence and definition of the mitzvah. So the mere fact that the Gemara raises this possibility might support this theory that there is some direct link to the mitzvah of Hadlakat Neirot Chanukah and serving as a zecher, a commemoration of Neirot Shebemikdash. A second proof. Rambam in Perek Yud Aleph of Hilchot Brachot. Here the Rambam engaged in a lengthy discussion about a question that puzzled and perplexed virtually all Rishonim. Why is it that certain Berchot HaMitzvah use the formulation with the Le, Likro et HaHalel, Le Hadlik Ner Shel Chanukah, Le Shev Basukah, Lishmoa Kol Shofar, and other mitzvot, you use the Al formulation, Al Achilat Matzah, Al Netilat Yadayim, Al Netilat Lulav, and this is a spurred discussion amongst all Rishonim. There's a lengthy rush in Masechet Pesachim and Avzayin Omer Aleph, who cites four different opinions as to what might be the rules and regulations which determine what might be the appropriate text for each Berchot HaMitzvah. Truth be told, that whatever theory you propose, there are going to be many exceptions, prompting one of the Balei HaTosafot to read to say, there is no rhyme and reason, it's all arbitrary. But Rambam didn't believe it was arbitrary, and he spends six halachot formulating his criteria. And here he states, the only time you use the Lamed formulation, Le, is when the mitzvah is absolutely obligatory. But if there is an option to do the mitzvah or not, under those circumstances, you do not recite the Lamed form, but rather the Al form. For example, there's no real mitzvah to eat meat on any given night. You can eat rice cakes and cottage cheese all your life. You don't have to eat any meat. But if you choose to eat meat, then you have to slaughter an animal in accordance with the laws of Shechita. This Rambam views as an optional type of mitzvah, and therefore the text of the bracha is not lishchot, but rather al hashchita. So the Ravid, commenting on this Rambam, says, Well, why then would you recite prior to the reading of the Megillah, Al Mikra Megillah? Megillah is not an option. Each and every member of Klal Yisrael, man and woman, are obligated to read the Megillah. So why shouldn't you say, Likro et HaMegillah? Proposes the Ravid. Maybe Rambam, what you had in mind is that every rabbinic mitzvah is really to be considered nothing but an option, at least from a biblical perspective. After all, the Torah doesn't mandate that you're obligated to read the Megillah. So from a Torah perspective, there is no real obligation to read the Megillah. And hence, you decided, Rambam, that every rabbinic mitzvah you would recite Al, and therefore you say Al Mikra Megillah. If that's the case, says the Ravid, why do we say, by hadlakat ner Chanukah, le hadlik ner shel Chanukah? After all, Chanukah is also only a mitzvah midrabanan, paralleling that of Kriyat HaMegillah. So why is it that you would recite le hadlik with the lamed form, using the rules suggested by Rambam? Answers derive it. Gives two answers. His second answer reads that perhaps since the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah was designed as a zecher l'nerot shebemikdash to commemorate and perpetuate the mitzvah of lighting the menorah on the Beit HaMikdash, asuhu kishel Torah. Its bracha follows the pattern not of a rabbinic mitzvah, but rather of a biblical commandment. And because of the fact that it follows the pattern of a biblical commandment, for this reason, the text of the bracha is not al, but rather lehadlik. Once again, clearly emerging from the words of the Ravid, that there is some strong connection between the mitzvah of hadlakat neirot Chanukah and the mitzvah of hadlakat neirot in the Mikdash. There are several serious halachic consequences as a result of the Rav's theory. There is no doubt that later on, the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah also took on the dimension of commemorating the miracle of the cruse of oil and engaging in in the mitzvah of Persumei Nisa, publicizing the miracle to the entire world as to what had taken place during those 8 days of Chanukah. There is no doubt. But ekronit, fundamentally, as we're suggesting, it also has a component simply to commemorate the lights in the Mikdash. There are several scenarios which are discussed in Mishneh Berurah and other sources as to whether or not a person can recite a bracha if there is no persumei nisa possible. For example, tomorrow night is Friday night. So as everybody knows, we're going to light Ner Chanukah before Shabbat begins. Obviously, one cannot light the menorah once Shabbat has begun. Yet, the menorah has to burn brightly for at least 1.5 hours after Tzeitat Kochavim, after absolute nightfall. Since we are obligated to light prior to sunset, sunset is 40 minutes before absolute nightfall, under those circumstances, the candles that you light for tomorrow evening must last at least 1.25 hours. Otherwise, they will not be fulfilling the criteria of Persumei Nisa, because in order to make a bracha for Ner Chanukah, you have to have the capacity to fulfill the mitzvah Persumei Nisa, and that requires at least 1.5 hour after Tzeitat Kochavim. So for this reason,
let me interject for a second, perhaps.
I don't know
if Rabbi Adler could see, but I think some people are trying to use the chat window to be participatory, and I don't know if you want to deal with all the responses at the end or during the beginning.
I was instructed by Shalom not to respond to the chat window. I'll be happy to respond to questions as we go along, but not through the chat. Anybody want to ask a question, I'll answer to them, or certainly at the end. But if they wanted to speak now, I'd be happy to respond as well. So now the question would be, then what happens if somebody uses the typical small candles that you receive in the mail from many charitable organizations? They send you a box of candles, which typically last maybe a half hour, 40 minutes. So you don't have any specially designed candles for Shabbos Chanukah. And you're going to light those candles on a Friday night, and you are guaranteed that they are not going to last well into Shabbos. So the majority of authorities believe that you're not permitted to make a bracha on those Ner Chanukah. Why? Because if the entire mitzvah is designed only to commemorate and to be mifarsein the miracles of the cruise of oil, these candles are not going to last into a time period when Persumei Nisa is applicable. And therefore you cannot make a bracha. Rabbi Soloveitchik said that since the lighting of our Ner Chanukah also has this component of commemorating the mitzvah of Nerot Shebemikdash, our obligation to fulfill that commemoration need not be measured by how long the candles light. A simple act of kindling is more than adequate and sufficient. And therefore he ruled, even if you only have those candles, which you are certain are not going to last a half hour after Sefer Kochavim, you are entitled to make a bracha. A second situation, again, quoted by the Mishnah Berurah. Somebody is a typical lawyer, and he comes home at 1 in the morning. What should he do? He has not yet lit Ner Chanukah. So the Mishnah Berurah says that if you have a family member who you don't mind waking up, you can wake them up, and then you'll make a bracha, because at least you will have Persumei Nisa to somebody else. But if no one is willing to get up for you, or there is nobody else home, and you come at one in the morning, when obviously there is no street traffic available to be mefarsein the miracle, under those circumstances, he instructs you to light without a bracha. Why? Because once again, the character of the mitzvah, the essence of this mitzvah, will not be fulfilled. You are not really going to be mefarsein the miracle to anybody due to the fact that there is no public street activity and there is nobody home to interact with those lights. Once again, the Rav suggested that this may not be correct, that due to the fact that there is also a zecher l'neirot shebemikdash, that neirot, that zecher, that commemoration can take place any time during the evening, whether anybody is outside or whether no one is outside, whether anybody is awake in your home or no one is awake. You can simply fulfill the mitzvah of hadlaka to commemorate and as our commemoration of Nerot Shebemikdash, and for this reason, one would be entitled to make the bracha under all circumstances. There might be another Gemara which would be explained against this background. There is a debate in Masechet Shabbat, what happens if after 15 minutes, you light your candles, after 15 minutes they blow out. Is one obligated to relight the menorah or not? The expression in the Gemara is, it's on the top of Chaf Aleph Amud Bet, Kavta Zakukla, O Kavta Ein Zakukla. Should the candles extinguish, must I relight them? Or need I not relight them? So if the mitzvah, the essence, and only fulfillment of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is Persumei Nisa, of publicizing the miracle, it's very difficult to understand why one might entertain the position of Kavsa Ein Zakukla, that if the lights go out 2 minutes after you lit them, you don't have to relight them. Why not? You haven't publicized the miracle to anybody. For that matter, it doesn't have to be 15 minutes. It doesn't have to be 2 minutes. They can go out after 3 seconds, and you do not have to relight it. Why would that be the case? But if, as we suggested, the essence of the mitzvah also contains a simple commemoration, a zecher l'neirot shebimikdash, for this reason, once you engaged in act of kindling, we now have fulfilled this zecher l'neirot shebimikdash, and for this reason, we can even entertain the possibility that kavta ein zakukla. Furthermore, there is a most interesting Ramban in Chumash, in which he disagrees with Rashi to a question which they share. The last chapter, the last topic of chapter 7 of Sefer Bamidbar deals with the dedication of the Mizbeach, Chanukat HaNesiim. It's the longest parak in the Chumash, 89 psukim. The first, the opening topic of chapter 8 is the mitzvah b'halotcha etaneirot, the mitzvah for Aaron to kindle the menorah. So Rashi asks his very famous question, Lama nismecha parshas ha-menorah l'parshas ha-nesiyah? Why is it that the Torah recorded the mitzvah of hadlakat neirot right next to the discussion of the dedication of the Mizbeach? So Rashi answers, on account of the fact that Aaron felt badly that neither he nor his tribe, Shevet Levi, participated in the dedication of the Mizbeach. There were 12 Shvatim who offered Korbanot on the first 12 days of the month of Nisan, each day allocated to one particular Nasi. Shevet Levi did not participate. So Aaron felt genuinely hurt that neither he nor any member of his Shevet, Shevet Levi, participated in the dedication of the Mizbeach. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, Aaron, don't feel so badly. What you're going to do is you're going to have another mitzvah to light the menorah. That's how Rashi explains it. Says the Ramban, I can't understand how this is much of a consolation prize unto Aaron. Imagine, Ramban doesn't use this exact description. Imagine you had two children and you had to award each of them a Hanukkah present. One of them you were sending on a trip to Florida, and the other one says you can go to Dunkin' Donuts. You're not sending him to Florida, but you can go to Dunkin' Donuts and have a couple of donuts. Obviously, it's not going to be much of a consolation prize that you're allowing him to go to Dunkin' Donuts and get a couple of donuts. He wanted to go to Florida. Aaron wanted to participate in the dedication of the Mizbeach. How do you somehow offer as a consolation the opportunity to light the menorah? If anything, says the Ramban, if you were looking for another activity to serve as a replacement for dedicating the Mizbeach, it should have been the Ketoret. Because the Ketoret, at least according to Kabbalistic literature, was considered the holiest activity in the worship of the Mikdash. And in fact, it also had an incredible reward. The Kohen who performed the Avod of the Ketoret in the Beit HaMikdash was promised to become a millionaire. Promised that he'd become a very rich man. And in fact, no Kohen was ever permitted to perform this activity twice in his lifetime. Because we don't want, if you win the lottery once, we're not going to entitle you to win the lottery a second time. So if anything, the Ketoret should have been the consolation prize. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu select Hadlakat Taneirot? Says the Ramban, I'll tell you why. What the consolation prize was, that the Korbanot, as important as a role as it plays within the psyche of the Jew, its activity and its accomplishments are obviously limited only as long as the Beit HaMikdash is standing. As soon as the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, there is no institution of Korbanot. In fact, Klal Yisrael has survived very nicely for over 2,000 years without any opportunity to offer Korbanot. So the Korban is something that is of a temporary activity. It's going to be a fleeting experience. But the lighting of the menorah, says the Ramban, is going to be a permanent institution. Where do we see that the lighting of the menorah is going to be a permanent institution? Says the Ramban, this is a remez l'ner Chanukah. So once again, the Ramban augments and supports the Rav's premise that our mitzvah of Hadlakat Neirot, in addition to publicizing the miracle of the cruise of oil, also has another aspect to it, that it's simply designed as our commemoration for the mitzvah of Hadlakat Neirot. I'd like to conclude with one thought based on one of the sources that I quoted to you earlier about the Kohen carrying the menorah outside of the Mikdash, having a czar, a non-Kohen, light it, carrying the already lit menorah into the Beit HaMikdash. The one who always argues with the Rambam, the Ravid, disagrees with the Rambam totally. He claimed that the only one who can light the menorah is the Kohen, and that a Kohen cannot carry the menorah outside the Mikdash and have an ordinary Yisrael, a non-Kohen, light the menorah. I'd like to use this machloket to explain something al pidrush. The lights of the menorah, and in general light, represents our quest for knowledge. Ner mitzvah v'torah or. The Ramban alludes to this in the Ramban that I mentioned at the beginning of Bamidbar chapter 8, that it is the responsibility of the Kohen to teach. And that was the mitzvah suggested through the mitzvah of Hadlakat Neirot. It's not so much the kindling of the menorah, but rather to illuminate, to inspire others to seek the fulfillment of the light of Torah. There is a fundamental debate, apparently, between Rambam and Ravid as to where we can acquire knowledge of Torah. Where can we acquire elements of truth? Rambam believes that the spark for knowledge need not originate in the Beit HaMikdash, or in the Beit Midrash, or in the Beit Knesset. The spark of all knowledge can actually be introduced outside of the framework of the Mikdash. After all, the Rambam was a philosopher, the Rambam was a doctor, and he understood fully well that one can acquire Chochmah outside of the Mizgeret of the Mikdash as long as you understand that you somehow have to bring that knowledge and frame it within the context of the Mikdash. You carry the already lit menorah, the acquisition of that knowledge, and you bring it into the Mikdash so that all of one's knowledge which one acquires is not somehow framed by the institutions of Torah and sanctity. The Ravid didn't recognize the validity of studying Chochmah outside of the Mizgeret of Torah. The Ravid was a typical... He wasn't a Torah Umada individual. The Ravid was somebody who spent all of the days of his life studying in a Beit Midrash, and he believed the only legitimate source of illuminating our quest for knowledge is the study of Torah. Hafachba v'hafachba dekulaba. Just study Torah, engage in further development, and you will be able to conquer all spheres of knowledge. As you well know, in most areas of halacha, whenever there is a debate between Rambam and Ravid, we generally follow the Rambam. And here I would suggest that this should be our approach as well, that we have the obligation to seek and acquire knowledge from wherever it might originate, whether it's from the Beit Midrash, universities, or any sphere of or source that might provide an inkling into all of Chochmat Elokim. As long as we use that knowledge properly, ultimately in the service of God, as the Rambam suggests, you take that already lit menorah and place it within the framework of the Mikdash itself. Any questions, ladies and gentlemen?
Okay, now, Rabbi, after you talk too much, it's probably better. Thank you. Now, okay, if people want to ask questions, they can do so, but now perhaps you want to take a look at the screen at the bottom to see some of the questions that came up, like, during the class.
Okay. Miriam Spiegel asked, isn't the Takana of Lulav for all 7 days Zecha LeMikdash? No, the first day it's a mitzvah midoraita. The rest of the days it's a Zecha LeMikdash. So I'm not sure exactly what the question might have been, that if you wanted to claim that Lulav is a Zecha LeMikdash, what might the question be? So if Miriam, you wanted to respond? No?
Miriam, is this what you meant, that it would not be al netilat lulav, it would be litol lulav?
Rambam indeed says that
the bracha would therefore be different. It would be have the same, because zechel of mikdash would have the same status as the bracha for minolav.
Rambam happens to state that the correct text for bracha of lulav is litol. That is the Rambam's formulation. So he's consistent about that.
Yeah, he sounds consistent. So Miriam had a good intuition there.
Yes.
Yes, you're cough, Miriam.
Gerald Landau of Toronto asked a question about why is matzah al achilat matzah. That's one of as I said during the presentation, for every theory that has been proposed, there are many exceptions, and al achilat matzah is one exception, which the Rambam himself uses the text al achilat matzah, despite the fact that it's very much against his own rules. So it's inconsistent.
Well, is it Ladlik Nirsa Shabbat de Raita?
That's a good question. Most believe that it's technically only midrabanan, but the Rav had a whole yahrzeit share where he linked the mitzvah of kibud and oneg, of which undoubtedly hadlakat neirot is one of the expressions, to the mitzvah of shamor et yom haShabbat lekadsho. Zachor and shamor have two parallels to it, and all of the entire purview of kibud veoneg on Shabbos is somehow linked to one of the two commandments, either Zachor or Shamor, and therefore it might contain an element which would raise it to some type of the Oraita level. Are there any other questions? Comments?
All right, if there are no more questions, we'll let Rabbi Adler go, and we'll thank him from Teaneck, and to wish everybody a good Hanukkah. Next Thursday is Rabbi Muskin from California, from Los Angeles, California, Lazar Muskin, so everybody's welcome back for the Parsha and all the other stuff in the middle. And have a good Shabbos, and thank you very much.